That's where I'm trying to live. I'm going to get it, and sometimes I don't. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food and work and control. And I've had issues with pornography and alcohol and rage and panic and depression. We are a label from a recovery ministry to a healing ministry because we want to open the doors wider and set the table bigger so that people don't just say, well, I'm not addicted to drugs or alcohol, so it doesn't apply to me. This is a place for any human hurt. Classic recovery is based on the 12 steps that AA uses and Al-Anon uses and everything. And we've kind of found that some of those steps are repetitive, and so we've kind of shrunk them down to 8 steps. And from time to time, we have to remind ourselves that these steps, even though we're not a classic recovery ministry anymore, we're more of a healing ministry, these steps are still central to our methodology. They're kind of foundational, directional to us. And so sometimes we need to revisit them. And we're not going to revisit all of them. But I think tonight it would be good for us to revisit the first one, the very first one. In the 12 steps, it's a longer one than in the 8 steps. In the 8 steps, it's pretty short. We admitted we were powerless to improve our unmanageable lives. A little bit shorter than the 12-step version. This powerlessness is hard to live because we're independent, rebellious little boogers. We really are. And sometimes we're just, I don't want to say childish, we're just like kids. I can do it. Let me do it, you know? Let me try it. Let me see. Just take your hands off for a minute. Let me see what I can do. You know, we're learning to walk. We're learning to, you know, feed ourselves. We're learning to do little stuff. And let me try it by myself. Let me do it. And we kind of, in a very innocent way, ask for independence. And then it's out and out rebellion. It's out and out. No, let me do it. You know, we switch. So I just want to ask us 5 questions tonight as we go through here. If we are powerless, you know, I'm being a little bit sarcastic here, but if we are powerless, if we say we're an 8-step, 12-step, whichever one you want to do, if we say that we're kind of led and directed and based on these things, if we are in fact powerless, we claim step number 1, our homemade solutions over and over. We have our own homemade solutions to our issues. If I'm see myself as a sinner, then I'm going to try really hard to be more righteous. If I see myself as ignorant or not knowing what I think I should know, then I'm going to study more and become more intelligent. If I see myself as apathetic or lazy, then I'm going to work harder. If I see myself slipping in the polls a bit, then I'm going to do something to get you to like me, get you to vote for me, get you to, you know, if we're truly powerless, why do we continually gravitate back to, I can do this. I can improve myself. I can make myself the person I think I ought to be. And what's interesting is we all have our own version of the significant version of us, the better version of us. For some people, it's I want to be stronger. For other people, it's I want to be better looking. For other people, it's I want to be what? You see what I'm saying? There's no two people who are the same. If we're kind of off the wall, it's like, well, I want to be more stable or I want to be more steady, whatever. So we try harder, we pray more, we study more, this is my job to do this. So if we're truly powerless, why is it that becomes, we just keep gravitating back to that? Try harder, work more. And does anybody not do this? Because I still do this. As long as I've been in recovery or healing or whatever you want to call it, as long as I've been doing this, I still will find myself gravitating back to, and this is my subconscious body language. which means I think I got this. You know, give me a second or two. I think I got this. That I don't know what your image is. If you shut your eyes, what do you look like? I look like toward God, you know. I don't, and so I just keep, and I don't know that we ever totally get away from this. Maybe this is something that will be, maybe we'll be this way for the duration. I don't know. But I find myself saying I'm powerless, and then I'm doing this. So if we're powerless, why do we continue to do this? Why do we continue to, you know, hold him off and say, here, let me try this. Let me work harder. That's the first one. That body language is this way. Number two is, if we are powerless, why do we pose so people think we have power? That's not this way. It's this way. We're posing for each other. I mean, think of all the ways we could do this. We could brag. There's some very subtle ways of bragging. You know, where there's anger, that you've got passive-aggressive anger. There's such a thing as passive-aggressive boasting. You know? I used to have an uncle that Uncle Philip, that he's gone to be with Jesus. He was one of my favorite uncles. He was so cool. But there were three brothers in that family, my dad, Uncle Philip, and Uncle John. And my dad and John were the real vocal braggers. They were the real, they didn't care just to strut their stuff and say, and he was always more subtle. He would say stuff like, you know, it was the funniest thing how I won that race. He just, you know, just, he would figure out some way to, I got a dog in this too, you know. And he was very subtle. It was a very passive-aggressive way of boasting. We have ways of bragging. We have ways of distracting people, you know. I really don't want you to see the vulnerable, powerless version of me, so I'm going to distract you. We do it with humor. We do it with a wall of words. You know, if I just keep talking, I don't give you a chance to say anything. And if you haven't got a chance to say anything, you can't ask any questions. You can't do any probing. Words, I'm really good at that. Y'all are like, yeah, you are. You are good at that. I am. I know I am. My wife knows I am. But we distract with humor. Somebody asks you a serious question. They really want to know how you're doing. And you'll turn it into some sort of joke completely, you know, distract them with humor. We have all kinds of ways of posing that to make other people think everything's okay. I've got it. And with God, it's like, no, I've got it. I don't know what your body language with people would be. Like, watch this one. You know, I don't know. I don't know what it would be. But we brag, we distract, or If I'm in a vulnerable place sometimes, what I'll do these days, if somebody asks me how I am, I'll give them the real quick, I'm not doing great, but how are you doing? It's like, see how helpful I am. See how concerned I am about you. I don't want to tell you my stuff. Let me help you with your stuff, because you're certainly more needy than I am. So let me help you with your stuff. There are all kinds of ways that we pose. We just don't want people to see us for what's really going on. So if we're powerless, why do we continue to push God away and say, I got this? If we're powerless, why do we continue to pose with each other? We put on the champion suit, the Superman suit, Spider-Man suit. I got this. We flex, we distract, we do whatever. Here's the third one. If we're powerless, why do we beat ourselves up when we fail? Now stop and think about that. If I truly admit that I'm... Think about that. There's a few who got to jump through mentally there to get that. I don't know why you do it. It's not fair for me to guess why you do it. I only know why I do it. Why I beat myself up when I fail. It's like I think I'm too good to fail. I can't allow myself the leeway a failure or weakness. I can't, no, I don't do that. I don't give up. That's like the first two put together, really. It's like, no, other people can fail. You're in charge of Pathway. You're supposed to have it together. You can't fail. You're not allowed to fail. You're supposed to be above failure. I'm too good to fail. That's one of mine. I didn't like admitting that, but I just did. Now you know. And the other reason that I've done it in the past is that I have, and I don't know if this hits you at all, I always kind of felt like self-hatred was endearing to God. You know, if I know God's not big on bragging and pride, but self-hatred, I think he likes that. I think it kind of touches his heart when he sees us hating on ourselves. And so when I fail and I hate on myself for failing, God is like, oh, saying that was like, what? Did you just say that? It, you know, to put it out on the table like that, it's like, no, God, that's not, God doesn't like that. And yet, I don't, no show of hands, but looks on your face, I'm seeing some people like, yep, yeah, I do that. That if I hate myself, God will like that. And God will feel sorry for me, and he'll not notice that I failed and everything's good. We'll all be in good shape. So if we're powerless, why do we beat ourselves up when we fail? On my good days, what I realize is that God wants this relationship with me really, really bad. This is important to him. He's gone to every length he could to establish this relationship with me, not the other way around. God made Eden so he could come to be with us. He took the first step. This whole Jesus thing, we didn't create that. God sent Jesus so he could be with us. God gives his Holy Spirit so he can be in us. God is the one who wants this relationship to work. Right? I mean, he's doing all the initiating. And in this relationship, there's one person who's got this relating thing down, and it's not me. It's him. He does the initiating because he knows what he's doing. He does the perpetuating because he knows what he's doing. He's the one that initiates it. He's the one that perpetuates it, keeps it going, because he knows what he's doing. I'm not paid, that's air quotes, I'm not paid to be the perfect one in this relationship. He's the one that's paid to do that. I'm being very tongue-in-cheek. Nobody gets paid. There are no dollars exchanged here. God is the one who takes on the role of the perfect one in this relationship, knowing full well that I'm the one who's going to fail. I mean, it took me forever to get this. And on a good day, that makes sense to me, and I can live in that. That he created us knowing that would be the case, and it's been that way for thousands of years, if not more. That's on a good day. But on a bad day, I beat myself up because I failed. Well, it brings us to the fourth one. If we are powerless, why do we continue to cling to perfection as a goal? Why do we cling to perfection as a goal? When God created everything, and we've talked about this before. When God created back in Genesis, he said it is good. He never said it was perfect. Good. Satan came along, the evil one, the snake, whatever you want to call that. Satan came along and said, guess what? We can take that which is very good and we can make it better. We can be perfect. We can be like God. Remember, if you eat this apple, you can become like God. You can get better than very good. You can become perfect. Perfection was never God's idea for humanity. Goodness was. Even very goodness was. But perfection wasn't. And yet we continue to set that as a goal for ourselves. How's that working? I think maybe we have this myth in our idea that if I become perfect, then I'll have the power. Once I reach perfection, either I'll attain the power, or God will give me the power, or I'll become like a God myself and I won't need his power anymore. I don't know. I don't know what our little lizard brains think on that one. But if we're powerless, why do we cling to perfection as a goal? I mean, I hear it all the time. I see quotes on Facebook, you know, and they're honorable. They seem like such honorable statements, you know. You know, we may not be there, but we're searching for perfection, or we're searching for excellence. We're searching for most excellent. We're searching, you know, and I like to explore new ways of doing things and relating to people and seeing what grace looks and seeing what love looks like. And so maybe I'm better at loving people today than I was 3 or 4 months ago. So some people would see, you're working on perfection. No, I'm not. I will never be perfect at loving people, not even in my mind, not even in my psyche. But I am learning little tricks, and I am learning human nature, and I'm learning my, you know. But the idea is to love each other, not to be perfect. Trying to be perfect distracts me from what I really am called to do, which is to love people. If all I'm thinking about is my perfection, there are a lot of needy people that walk across my radar, and I never even notice them because I'm preoccupied with being perfect. I'm too preoccupied with being squeaky clean. I lived there for a long time. Yeah, I did a whole lot of ignoring of others and a whole lot of hating of myself. It was just a lovely life. Anyway, that's number four. Here's number five. If we're powerless, why can't we embrace grace as our only option? If I'm powerless, think about it. If I'm powerless, what hope do I have? I only have one hope, and that's somebody bigger, better, far more gracious and loving than me is going to help me. That's what leads to step two. We believe the power greater than ourselves, you know? That's what leads to the next step. But if I'm really powerless, why can't I embrace grace as my only option? It's the only one I've got. And I think one thing we need to do is stop real quick. We still got just 2 or 3 minutes. One thing we need to do is stop and say, when we say grace in pathway, we mean far more than just forgiving grace. Grace where God says, when you say, I'm sorry, he says, you're forgiven. That is the tip of the iceberg. That's one small facet of grace. The big part of grace is the transformative, healing work of grace. That somehow I don't know how to explain it. Some people don't like this word, but it's magic. It's magic. It's mystical. It's miraculous. When we throw ourselves on God's grace and we plunge into it, it begins to do things inside that defy human explanation. It defies human words. Wayne and I talk all the time, how do we get people to see that you don't toy with grace, you dive into it? You know, how do we get people to see how much? It's like you ain't got nothing else. Stop trying to be better than what you are. Stop trying to improve yourself. Stop working harder. Stop trying to be more sincere. Just stop. Just stop. And say, God, if anything's going to come out of my life, it's going to be you working your magic of grace inside of me. The thing that did it for me, and I've shared this with you before, the thing that did it for me is that Wayne turned to me one day and he said, if you don't stop this thing, it was back when I was really into porn. And every week I'd get to him and I'd say, Wayne, I'm still struggling with this. And one day he finally said to me, he said, Wendell, he said, how would you feel if you knew that for the rest of your life you would be addicted to this? And God, how do you think God would feel about you? Would God stop loving you? Would God somehow withdraw from you? Would God somehow, you know, see you as a colossal disappointment and a colossal failure and a worthless piece of, you know what, you know? Or do you think God would feel the same way he does right now about you? 10 years from now, you've not changed a bit. Whatever your issue is, whatever it is, you're a racist, you're a shopaholic, you're a workaholic, you're a whatever it is, you know, that you're into, drugs, alcohol, whatever it is, you're into it, and you say, I've got to get better, because God's only going to give me so much, and after a while, God's just going to pull out of this thing. He's going to say, forget you, I'm finished with you. And so I had to think through that. I had to think, what kind of God do I believe in? Do I believe in a God that says, I'm only going to give you grace for so long, and after that, no more. It's out. Or I'm only going to grace you if I see, I'll continue to grace. That's not grace. That's a business deal. Think about it. That's a business deal. That's not grace. And so I had to think through this and realize that God either graces me and loves me and is gaga over me, regardless of how I behave, regardless of how I feel, regardless of how I talk, regardless of anything, God is gaga over me, and he will be just as much 10 years from now as he is now, even if I don't change a bit. And when I got that, I began to understand grace that way. It was like, oh, shoot. Grace is all I've got. This is the only option I have. And when I plunged into it, then it started to work its magic. And attitudes started to change, and habits started to change, and relationships started to change. And I thought, I didn't see this one coming. Isn't it amazing that all the things I'd worked on so hard all those years and couldn't fix any of them, I was powerless against all of it. When I stopped trying to fix it and I plunged into grace, one by one they started to change. It's so hard to explain this. I think that's the best I've ever done explaining it. Do you kind of get what I'm saying? Stop trying. Stop. It's not working. And just let God love you to a better place. It's the only hope we have. That's why the first two steps are the most important steps of all of them. Nothing I bring to the table. There's no harder effort. There's no more ingenious idea. There's no new level of creativity I can reach. There's no better attitude I can have. There's nothing I can bring to the table that will make any difference in my life. All a little incremental, but then you slip back. But, you know, you turn around and look and think, I'm a yo-yo, up, down, up, down, up, down. The only hope we have is to stop all that and just say, God, you know, that's step two. I mean, you stop all that and you're admitting, by stopping, I'm powerless. And then you come to step two and you say, okay, God, if you're going to run dry, I'm completely out. If this relationship's going to work, if this life is going to work, if anything about me is going to work, it's going to have to come from you because I have run out. My tank is empty. That's when the magic starts. That's when God steps in and says, I've been waiting for this for a long time. I've been waiting for you. I've been watching your gas gauge all this time. It's been on empty the whole time, but you just have seen it as full. It's empty. It's been empty the whole time. And now that we both agree that it's empty, now that we're both in agreement with this, we can do something here. I just wrote this as kind of a closing comment. There is a seed of life-changing grace that wants to grow in each of us. John Wesley called it prevenient grace. You call it whatever you want to call it. There's really not a theology to it as much as there's a reality to it. But there is a seed of life-changing grace that wants to grow in each of us. We need to stop stunting its growth with all our crazy attempts to have power. Don't try to cultivate it. Don't try to fertilize it. Don't try to prune it. Leave it alone and let the seed of grace do what it wants to do, to grow up inside. There is something really potent about the steps. You know, there's something very... And then we said, okay, if anything's going to come out of this, it's going to have to be you. Maybe we'll talk about step two next week. I don't know. Anyway, that's all I got to say about that. It's all yours, man.
So,